Again, thank you so much for joining us right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we love so much to have comments from you. We're happy to see we have almost over 400,000 downloads of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z shows. And so we know lots of you are listening, not only in this country, but from all over the world. And a good thing to do is go to naturalnurse.com. A lot of people write in that they want more information. It's all posted. Still what now is the old-fashioned way on the website. We do have also Instagram, and we have Facebook, The Natural Nurse, and Instagram, The Natural Nurse. But the most comprehensive list of how you can get involved with natural health and healing through The Natural Nurse and Dr. Eugene Zamperone is go to naturalnurse.com and look at calendar of events. Under there, we have all our up and coming classes. For instance, we have one coming up this week, which is called Supplement Savvy for Health Providers and Consumers. For instance, when you buy an already prepared vitamin or mineral, do you know how to evaluate what's in it? Because sometimes you have to look at the label itself to find out which supplement you want to take together. Do you want to take it separately to support absorption? What additives are there? Does the supplement contain chemicals such as magnesium stearate? Magnesium stearate is a flowing agent. It has nothing to do with magnesium, and it actually can interfere with absorption. Does it have benzoate as a preservative? Does it have colors and dyes? You need to read your label. What is the GMO status? And what are the drug herb or drug nutrient interactions that might be going on when you take a lot of supplements, because you hear that a supplement is good, but then you're on pharmaceuticals as well. Well, that course is open to all. Anyone can take it. Just go to naturalnurse.com calendar. It's coming right up. There's a link to sign up. And if you are a healthcare professional, then you also get 3 CE units. But you're allowed to take the class. It's open for anyone. If you don't need the CE units, you just don't apply for the CE units, and you still learn the content. And then we have a completely free online series coming up called Living Pain-Free Naturally. Those of you who are involved with natural alternatives over the years, you know that Dr. Zamperone and I have written many, many books. You can also find all the books on our website. And one book is called Arthritis, the Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide. And then we also have a book called Supplements for Pain. So if you sign up completely free for the Living Pain-Free webinar series, which is listed at naturalnurse.com calendar, you also will be able to download a free copy of the book Supplements for Pain. So you can find that right on the website. We also have a lot of live classes in Florida at Century Village. That's every Tuesday night. And we have a trip to Jamaica coming up called Echo Tours for Cures, where you get to actually live with indigenous bush doctors and study natural medicine live right there with them. And then one of my favorite classes of the year is going to launch in March. It's called the Natural Nurse Herb Certification Course, and that's an online course where we actually cover things like the basics of herbal medicine and also botany and botanical nomenclature, and also how to use very specific herbs and natural therapeutics for yourself and your family. And we also delve into the spiritual aspects and feeling the consciousness of plants. That course is a serious endeavor. It's given over a period of 4 months. And if you come to the classes live, you can attend live with the group, but we also archive it. So if the time we have the live classes does not work for your schedule, once you're signed up for the class, you get all the handouts, all the free information, and the homework assignments for the class which you can do at your own pace. And that offers a certification called the Natural Nurse Herbal Certification. And you will get that certification if you complete the course. And if you're a health professional, such as a nurse or a massage therapist, a registered dietitian, a lot of other kinds of medical professionals, then you get 18 CEUs in addition to the knowledge that you'll get. But the course is open to anyone, and everyone will get the certificate, and those who require the CEUs also will get 18 CEUs towards their nursing or nurse practitioner, licensed massage therapist, registered dietitian, clinical nutritionist. So something for you to look at. And today, we are so happy to bring on board, since we were talking about consciousness of plants, that's a perfect intro to our guest who's here with us today. And our guest today is Mr. Michael Conti, and he is a filmmaker, director, writer, and he found personal direction when he came across information and knowledge about Saint Hildegard. And Saint Hildegard acted as an example, and he dedicated a film to her, which is a beautiful film called The Unruly Mystic, Saint Hildegard, which I actually do teach a class that's sort of an open forum and sharing, not really a class so much as a open sharing about Hildegard. And, you know, he really delved deeply into that topic and became very involved with the concept of the unruly mystic, which we will be talking about with him today. So thank you so much for joining us today, Michael Conti.
Thank you for having me on with you. I'm calling in from sunny Boulder, Colorado.
Well, I love Boulder. That's a great place. And of course, when you listen to Natural Alternatives here, perhaps you're listening live here in the U.S. or any country, or perhaps you're listening. I know a lot of our listeners just download podcasts. So we do have your contact information as crazywisdomfilms.com, as well as Michael at theunrulymystic.com. So they can find you.
Yeah, that's correct. That's where I'm at online.
Now, we had a very interesting conversation, you and I, and we actually were introduced through someone that we've had as a guest here many times over the years, Brigitte Mars, because she's a very, very, very well-known herbalist and has written books. I think we've done a show on almost all her books here at The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And she mentioned you because she knew I was doing the class on Hildegard. And I'm so happy that she did, because you have a fascinating story. Why don't you share with us what made you interested in St. Hildegard in the first place?
Well, I think my connection to St. Hildegard really comes from the place of my discovery of creativity. I see St. Hildegard as an immensely creative person, as somebody who exemplifies for me all aspects of being creative. And I don't just mean being creative as being an artist, painting or doing one thing, but as somebody who is a polymath in the sense of doing so many things and being so prolific. And the four things that I touch on in her film were music. And most Americans know her through hearing her music and being kind of astonished that this medieval saint was a composer of music. And then the second one is, you know, that she was an administrator. She administrated an abbey with nuns and had to manage the household for so many years and deal with the inner politics and the outer politics. Then the third is her visions and the visions that she was receiving from God and how she articulated those into her writings and then into the artwork that got shared with the teachings and Catholicism. And then finally, the piece that I really didn't know that much about her until I went there was the medicine. And I think that's the connection that really kind of brings me to Brigitte Mars and to you and being on the show, and how she received information from God that inspired her to write her work, and how she looked at the herbs and saw in them the information that would lead to healing. I think there's the interesting part to that is there was also the Crusades going on, and a lot of information was also being carried.
Wait, let's stop right there for 1 minute, Michael, because yes, that's true. Let's backtrack to the years this woman lived, because that in and of itself is astonishing.
Yeah, I mean, it is astonishing that we're still talking about her, and she lived, what, over 850 years ago? I mean, I feel like she's very present, and when I start to get into feeling her, it feels like I'm not talking about somebody who's ancient, who's gone, but who's still very present with us.
But even in her century, to be a scientist, a composer, a nun, a spiritual leader, a healer, and a real strong women's liber, I will say, you know, just reading her writings, which who knows that a nun could be that in those times. It's just amazing to me.
Yeah. And I think, I think that's why I say she's very creative. And that's kind of the way that the film approaches her, and how I approached her was through my own creativity and seeking that river that she was obviously in, that flows for all of us.
Yeah, really, like something that you even now, and as a man, how about that, can relate to.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we're talking about the divine feminism, you know, that's accessible to all of us. And there's a lot of toxic masculinity that kind of avoids going into this, that aspect of ourselves as men. And, you know, she had to deal with some pretty harsh people when she was alive in her time. Anecdotally, you know, she stood up to four popes. And as you can imagine, she probably dealt with a fair amount of fear of being persecuted for her beliefs. We know that people like her tended to be burned at the stake.
I know. That's amazing. What do you mean by she stood up to four popes? Where did that concept come from for you?
Well, the lifetime of people in her time was generally they were dead by the time they were 30, 37, 38, right? In the medieval times. She lived until she was in her 80s, which is phenomenal.
That's another phenomenal thing. In those years, guys, we're talking about the year 1000 something. She lived to her 80s when I believe from, historical evidence, 40 was a ripe old age then.
Yeah. And I think this other point is pretty inspirational for a lot of people. She did not really come into her full until she was 48 years old. 48.
Which most people don't live that long in those days.
Yeah. Yeah. And part of her story is that she was tithed to the church at age 10. She went into Anchorage.
I'm going to stop you just help explain to our audience, because that word tithe would probably be something someone would understand if they're Catholic. But let's just talk about what is tithe.
So my understanding of it is that, and it's tithing is still happens today. So if you're in the Catholic Church, you give a percentage of your income to the church. Maybe say you give 10% of your income. Well, there were 10 kids in her family. She was the last one. And so the family tithed her, gave her to the church. So that was their giving. She came from a lesser noble family. So they actually had some money. And so when they tithed her, they also gave money to the church.
Right. So she was, think about that, people. So you have a lot of children. This was a 10th child. And that's a concept, I believe, mostly in Catholicism. I'm not sure if it's there with the Episcopalians and other Lutherans. I'm not sure. I'm not sure, because in Judaism, we don't have tithing. We have give all your money. No, but some kind of concept of giving quite a bit. But in tithing, it's about giving 1/10 of your wealth, I believe. You know, that you whatever you can afford, like if you have a dollar, you know, you might give 10 cents. So depending, but she was the 10th child. And also, there is some history, and I imagine you know it too, about her having what we might consider now and what might have in fact been epileptic seizures, because she had severe headaches and she would have visions. And like you brought up already, Michael, that visions at that point in time, if you shared them with people, were often considered heretic witchcraft, and you would be burned at the stake for sharing them.
Yeah, I mean, that is part of it. I think the other part too, and I mentioned this, is she went into anchorage, which meant she gave herself over to God. She was locked into a small space, a small room with another woman. And she was actually in this space for many, many years. I think, I don't remember, I don't know if she went in when she was 16 and she came out when she was 38.
Wow.
Yeah, so kind of like a monk, like you think about a monk going into a cave and being a hermit.
Like a cloistered existence.
Yeah, she's in a cloister, but now she's in a cloistered, which is called anchorage. And they actually go through the moment of, they actually are consecrated to Christ by being considered dead. Which is kind of an amazing thing. So as a 60-year-old, you're at your own funeral. And now you're put into this place, in this room. And she's in this room with this other woman by the name of Yuda for a long time. I walked through her cell. You know, the ruins in Dizzy Bodenberg are still there. And it's profoundly a thin veil place. And I think your listeners know what that means. It feels like it's both in the past and in the present and in the future. You're just in this kind of timeless spot. Very
so you have physically gone there, so that this yeah. led you on your journey further to where you actually went to where Hildegard walked and lived.
Yes. Yeah. The most recent time was in 2019 when my wife and I, Heather, went there. We actually did the Hildegard Way, which is a pilgrimage, which you can do in Hildegard land that our colleague had designed and set up, Dr. Annette Esser. A few years earlier. So, you know, it's a still living place that you can actually go and experience Hildegard in Germany. And there's a big movement and interest around her still. So once again, here's a person who lived 850 years ago, and you can walk in her footsteps and see the places where she lived. And you can feel an energy that is really, really vibrant still.
Isn't that really, it's an exciting thing. And you got, let's say, sort of a spiritual awakening experience there.
Yeah, I had a confirmation. I mean, I went there to do a spiritual retreat in 2014 that Matthew Fox was part of. And I was going to do a film about the pilgrims or the people that were on retreat, because I just thought that was kind of fascinating. But when I was there, I realized that the connection I was having with Hildegard, especially when I was in the shrine where they actually have her relics, pieces of her body, I felt this connection that I had almost 20 years previously when I was in Barcelona. And I had first stepped or felt that river of creativity, that river that flows for all of us, that enables us to kind of heal ourselves, take ourselves to even a deeper level of humanity, to better ourselves.
Well, so you're not, this isn't new to you, to be open to the energetics of, let's say, a space-time continuum, and you allow yourself to bring that in and allow that experience to unfold, because it's pretty intense that you actually went there.
It is pretty intense. I actually went there and had that experience. I grew up in Boulder, Colorado, so that those experiences aren't new to me. But you know, I've been developing them and experiencing them in different places and using them more in my filmmaking, so that the viewer can also have that experience as well. I think that's part of the joy I have in making films and sharing them is to make them experiential. So with Hildegard, it's actually a series of films on the Unruly Mystics, and that's the first one that I did.
Right. That's something I did want to bring up, and I want to remind our listeners that you are listening to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network. Is PRN, and you can also listen to our shows as archives. Today, we are interviewing filmmaker, director, writer, Michael Conte, and we're talking specifically about one of his films called The Unruly Mystic, Saint Hildegard, and he is in the midst of developing that theme, which we will talk about now, and you can find him at crazywisdomfilms.com and also Michael at theunrulymystic.com. Is there a whole website, Michael, called theunrulymystic.com?
Yes, there is.
So there's that, and then there's Crazy Wisdom Films also. So now tell us about that whole concept, because when I found out about your movie, which, as I mentioned, I integrated into a class that, you know, a sharing that we do about the Hildegard teachings, particularly in healing, because that's my aspect. There are other whole groups who just do her music, for instance, which is also healing, along with gemstones therapy and dietary recommendations, such as not eating wheat. How far ahead of her time was she, et cetera. But you then came up, when I was looking for St. Hildegard, it came up with someone else that you did a movie about, also called The Unruly Mystic, which I was confused about, but now you're here to explain that.
Yes, so it is a series, and this first one is on spirituality and creativity, which is the focus that I took with Hildegard. The second one is on spirituality and nature, you know, that feeling you get when you're in nature, and how do you articulate that energy that you pick up from walking barefoot in the ground, or seeing a rainbow, or being in the wind and the moisture is falling on your face. And the person that I felt to me really allowed me to kind of make that connection was the American naturalist John Muir, who was a contemporary of Teddy Roosevelt, helped found our national park system, specifically Yosemite National Park. And for any of the listeners who have been to Yosemite National Park, you know what it feels like to walk there or to be there. Once again, I think that's a place that creates energy to allow you to just really immerse yourself in nature. And so that's the second film in the series that came out right in 2019. And we toured it to 65 theaters around the country, and we showed it in Yosemite, and it's also available online to view. And I think it's experiential. I think people, when they see that film, they feel like what it feels like to be in nature. You hear from John Muir through his words, and also through other theologians and psychiatrists and other thinkers, you know, how those words are important to us, and the connection of the nature church. And that film is the second. I'm working on the third one, which is on spirituality and curiosity. And it's maybe more tied back into the work that you do, Ellen, in terms of science. You know, what is spiritual about science? We've kind of lost that connection between those two pieces. Scientists have become non-spiritual, I think, in a lot of ways. But
right, but we don't have to dig too deeply. For instance, let's just mention Einstein here. Who really was very involved in spirituality, and even his science was not, he didn't do experiments. It was all thought experiments that he got, you know, sort of revelations about.
Yeah. And he is the subject of that third film.
You see? Perfect.
Yeah, right. So it can just go on and on. I mean, I just was thinking the other day, like the fourth film could be, you know, spirituality and fun. You know, how do we have fun? You know, what is Yeah, it seems like we're having less fun today than we used to. And I know as we get older, it's harder to have fun, but, you know, let's have fun. But there is a spiritual component to laughter and having fun. So trying to figure out who that saint might be or who that person might be. I was thinking maybe Karl Marx.
Oh, that's interesting. You'll see who comes to you for that. Yeah. So that's interesting. I'm going to definitely watch that other movie, because when I was searching for The Unruly Mystic, if you just put in The Unruly Mystic, both the Hildegard movie comes up and the other one that you made comes up.
Yeah,
so that was just confusing to me. So now I understand it a lot more. But in your film, you did an absolutely fabulous job of getting what you're talking about here, Michael, which is the feeling tone of Hildegard.
I think that part of that comes from my, you know, my background. You know, I've been doing this since I got out of school. I mean, it's been a real passion for me, but I did approach filmmaking as an artist. I did approach it because I was a painter, and I wanted to bring words into my paintings, and I was like, well, I should just do film. And I'm literally saying film, 16 millimeter film. It's progressed into what we have today, a digital format that everybody has access to. It's a tool that a lot of us use to share stuff. And I worked in Hollywood and I saw what Hollywood was creating, which was kind of food for the masses, lowest common denominator, but not using it in a way to bring about greater good or to bring about positive experiences. You know, Hollywood likes to give you a horror film, create more anxiety, or to create stuff that's so imaginary it doesn't really have anything to do with your life. It's pure escapism, which is fine. But using film as a way to create, I want to use the idea of going to church. I'm not a religious person. I'm a spiritual person, so I'm not really speaking for any denomination here. But if you walk into a church, churches really were the initial theaters, and they also probably emulated what it was like to be in a shamanic experience or a pagan experience in a cave or in the forest. Right, the lights, the smells, you know, the theatrical aspect of it. And, you know, now today we have theater. You know, we all go to the theater and we're immersed in darkness watching something on a screen.
Well, I don't know how much longer that concept's going to be in play, Michael. I really don't. You know, with the current health conditions, you know, which of course are around the world, I really wonder about that aspect of getting together and watching movies, especially when people have giant screens in their house.
And yeah, it's fine.
Immerse themselves in.
Yeah, we all have fire. I mean, not all of us, but yeah, we're still. I mean, think about it. You go watch your television at your home. Do you turn off the rest of the lights in the room, and so the focus is really on the screen? You know, it's all about how you connect to the device or the screen that you're going to be with. We could be on an airplane and being immersed into what we see just on our phone.
That's true.
So, you know, a candle is not the same thing as a fireplace, but you're still connecting to the light.
That's true. But I'm just saying that I know even from a business level, the movies,
it's very much changed. You know, both of my films are on Amazon, and I have noticed a lot more viewership of them on there. And I have, since I made them, I always knew that I would be using a streaming platform in some form or another. Although I loved having the opportunity in 2019 to be at the theater watching my film with other people and then talking about it afterwards. That was just a profound experience and really rewarding. People, when they do see the film, like you just did, there's still a connection. So I don't think it's an all lost thing. I think it's a loss for the larger industry because of how much money they have to put into it, and how expensive it is to make their types of films. But I make all my films as almost as a labor of love. So everything else is an extra, you know, reward.
Well, in your film, you actually explore four different aspects of Hildegard, you know, sort of themes about her. What are those?
So that's the long piece I gave you at the beginning, and just quickly, and you actually reiterated those again too, which is her music, the medicine, her visions, and then also her administration, her spiritual teachings through the Abbey. And I'd like to just kind of go back to that Abbey aspect of it. Her Abbey is great. Still there.
So the actual one that she had built.
Well, that's a ruin, but her church, she was part of the Benedictine order. The church and the Abbey is still there. There are still nuns who are following her teachings, her Catholic teachings as a Benedictine in Bingham, Germany. And you can actually go to the gift store and buy her herbs, buy the wine from the Abbey, buy books on her, everything. And it is a tourist mecca, believe it or not. People from around the world go there. When we were there in 2019, we actually spent the night in the cloister part for guests and had our meals with the nuns. If some of you know what it's like to walk into a Catholic church and you see the crucifixion, feels very dark and gloomy, this is the exact opposite. There's beautiful abstract paintings of spirituality, and there's just a completely different energy that you don't normally get when you're in a Catholic setting. Her energy still exists, which is just fascinating.
That certainly is. And when you went there, I think you actually had those kinds of spiritual experiences. Now, one thing that isn't on this list between her music, which is amazing and has had recently, I think, a big regrowth with some groups reproducing a lot of the music that she wrote.
Yeah. And, it's even more relevant than people reproducing her music. We're in September, which is her feast day is in September 17th. And last year, we actually did a virtual pilgrimage. We offered content and we were showing videos. We had like 150 pilgrims from around the world who joined us for 12 days. And this year we did the same thing, but we kind of shortened it down. And I had some people that came on and presented. Both Brigitte Mars and Kathy Gavel did a whole piece on Hildegard's herbs. But I had Grace McLean, who actually did a new piece of, she did a new musical that performed at the Lincoln Center in New York City, come on. And when I was talking about Hildegard being in Anchorage, she was with this other saint, not this other saint, with this other nun by the name of Yuda. And so Grace actually did a performance piece about the two of them being in Anchorage, but it was done with in a very unique way. And Grace is an up and coming actor, performer in New York, and it was just really neat to talk to somebody who was connected with Hildegard in a very creative way, but also in a high level performance way, other than just repeating or redoing the music. She was doing her own interpretation.
Well, so it's so widely available now. It's amazing when this woman was writing this music and the names of her songs, such as Canticles of Ecstasy and Voice of the Blood. I find that really interesting because she, in terms of her health teachings, which is where my focus has been, was very involved with blood and actually believed in bloodletting as a remedy for some health issues, which, by the way, is also regaining prevalence to this day.
It is. And I'm not sure, I have yet to have the bloodletting experience. I'm not sure if you've had that.
No, I never have.
So when we were over in Germany, and when I was working on the film the first time, we were actually staying with Dr. Vikar Streglo, who has the Hildegard Clinic in Allenbach, Germany. And he has treated over 30,000 people, and he's continued to teach, and he's got a whole bunch of books. You may already know about it, but
Yeah, I love his books. I think that they're some of the finest in terms of where he put together Hildegard's health teachings into real protocols and then actually tried them on real thousands of people in our day.
Yeah, and he comes out of the traditional pharmaceutical world. So he saw that, you know, that the pharmacies were actually giving us poison in some of the pharmaceutical medicine that was going out. It was making us ill as opposed to healing us. And that kind of drove him into working on a more naturalistic herbal method with Hildegard. But when I was there, he was actually getting ready to do the bloodletting. It was a full moon that was coming up in a couple of days, and our schedule wasn't going to allow us to stay there. But, you know, I was like, bloodletting, okay, I get that. But, okay, bloodletting when there's a full moon, wow, let's really just, like, amp this up a little bit more.
Yes, because, you know, that's very, very much in a lot of different traditions in terms of working both growing of plants, particularly medicinal plants, harvesting them, and using them. And there are full and complete scientists about that, such as biodynamic farming. So, you know, that's interesting too, because they're bringing in another level of energetics and recognition of natural forces.
So, you know, the question that I wanted to ask you, Ellen, and we had kind of briefly talked about this, which is the aspect of her receiving visions for medicine, for different plants that then became medicine, and then the information that may have been coming through the Abbey from the Crusades, like Ayurvedic information. You really kind of see both those things in action. And I'm curious, you as a scientist, but also as a spiritual person, what is your thought on that, on those two different stories?
Well, what do you mean two different stories?
When I talk to people, and I've talked to a lot of people about Hildegard, there are those who just really believe she was divinely inspired. And then there's those who also feel that the information she got is more part of like the German folk medicine, you know, has more of a tradition.
Right. Well, I definitely think there's a combination thereof, because she did believe in the German folk medicine, but then so many of her modalities, let's say looking at something that we might call a yantra in Eastern mystical practices, which were those beautiful circular mandalas, although I don't know if she used the word mandala, that she also integrated into what is truly what we would consider right now a holistically oriented therapeutic modality, where you're bringing in food, you're bringing in spiritual practice, you're bringing in visualization and looking at certain healing actually artwork, and then of course, you know, like she talked about spelt, and then looking at the herbs as well. Another cohort of hers, you know, much later though, is Dr. Rudolf Steiner. That might be an interesting person for you to look into doing a movie about, because I don't think enough has been done about him. But he was more in the 1900s, you know, several centuries after Hildegard, but also bringing in that concept of the rhythm of how everything works together. Now, if she was an epileptic, you know, they are known to have these sort of brain spasms, you might say, that sometimes initiates the incoming of new information, visions, and connection to things that might be called heretic or might be called spiritually inspired. And she was lucky enough to get a pass, like you said, through being involved in all different leaders of the church. And she was actually recognized and considered a savant in a way.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating with that progression that she got recognized. You know, she was considered a saint by the Germans for a really long time, but she wasn't actually sainted until, you know, I think it was 2013.
Yeah, 2012, I believe, which is amazing. That's like yesterday.
Yeah. I happened to be there for the first pilgrimage, or for her first feast day, when the when the Vatican was there, and it was pretty fascinating just to kind of see the pageantry that was being brought up around her.
Wow, did you film any of that day?
Oh, that's I did. So, yeah, it's in the first version of the film. I am working on a new edit right now, which is going to include some of the pilgrimage footage, and that's going to premiere in Germany at the Hildegard week, which is happening in August, and we'll be I'll be over there for that. We'll also be providing it online as a streaming, very similar to what we've done for the last 2 years with the virtual Hildegard pilgrimage.
Well, make sure you send me that, because I will send that out to my email list to, you know, join in if there's a way to join in. And of course, you're not limited to participants if you're going to do it also online.
That's right. Yeah. And we'll make it inclusive too. So if you are online, that you are feeling like you are participating. So, you know, it's always been my thing, is to make things as experiential as possible for greater community and learning.
Because if you look at those mandala-like drawings, that I think she actually had other artists do it, but they have maintained their color through the centuries. I mean, they're amazing. Just that alone is something to behold.
Yeah.
You know, her artwork, her visualizations, her full spectrum music, as you said, which is now being brought back to fruition, her teachings on herbal medicine. And also, she was considered a scientist in her day.
Well, and that kind of goes back to that question. And I just want to just propose it. And the fact that she was in Anchorage from age 16 till 38, she was in a cell. So she wasn't really able to do science, you know? She wasn't able to go out into the field and collect things or you know what I mean? I mean, to me, that I find that like really interesting, to be in this kind of insular space, but also have this expansive creativity to be able to have visions about things that are outside of your touch.
Right. And how she had visions about it. But then she also did work with, I don't think she called them patients, because, you know, politically she wasn't supposed to be doing medicine. So I believe she called it spiritual healing. But basically she did give people herbs as well as prayers, and people did flock to her center.
Yeah, there is a hospital on the site of the ruins at Dizzy Bonenberg. So there was a hospital there. There was a place to treat people. So obviously, you know, if you're in the medieval times, and you, there was something wrong with you, where would you go? You would go to the abbey or to the monastery for treatment.
Right. And her treatment would involve, you know, well, a lot of these things that you mentioned, which in the books of Dr. Streglo, he actually has brought them into modern times, and also has documented case studies where he's used these. Now, we don't know that his therapeutics were exactly what Hildegard used, but it's certainly a lineage of it.
Right. Well, if you go back to the source material, which is in Latin, and you translate that is your kind of your beginning, you know. And I've been really intrigued by this myself, and I haven't found anything in our contemporary literature for the American audience. So I actually reached out to Brigitte and Kathy to help write a book or a short book on 10 herbs that Hildegard, kind of her favorite herbs. And we're actually working on that right now with the idea to have that ready in time for August, because I think those two women really kind of bring a very well-rounded approach to Hildegard. I mean, Kathy is going back to the source material, and then Brigitte's kind of able to look at it from more of a global perspective.
Right, a modern herbalist. That's how I've been using her, also actually developing protocols from her teachings and using them on real world clients for the last, you know, 40 years or so. But for instance, she loved Galangal. That was something that's interesting, because that does not grow in Germany.
No, and the way I pronounce that is galant. Is that the same thing?
Yeah.
We're talking about the Chinese ginger spice.
It's a ginger. It's a type of ginger. It's not gingery, though, if you try it.
Right. Yeah. It's, and Vicard, Actually, I didn't know about it until he told me about it. He said, you should always have a couple of these tablets with you in case you have a heart attack. And he was sharing a story with me about somebody who had actually used it and it had saved their life because it brings about a very intense flushing to your face as your blood rushes up. And it's very helpful for headaches as well. If you're having a migraine or anything that's kind of in your head, it'll dissipate that. I like to put the powder into a spelt porridge that I make, just a little bit. It mixes really well with the apple and the sweetness, and to kind of add an overall flavor, a little nutmeg in there too. The Gallant. And then you can also, like you just said, you could also go to a Chinese grocery store and just buy it there and cut it up and use it.
Well, we're going to take a little break right here, Michael, and just to give our listeners a listen to the Natural Medicine Chest. And I want to remind our listeners that you are listening to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And our topic today is the unruly mystics with filmmaker Michael Conti, and he's sharing so much information. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion about some of Hildegard's really favorite herbs, for instance, hops. She was the one who developed beer. We can thank her for that. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll talk about high blood pressure or hypertension.
Hypertension or high blood pressure is a disease of the Western world and a product of modern civilization. Cultures that continue to adhere to an indigenous lifestyle, which includes low stress levels, a non-refined whole foods diet, as well as vigorous exercise, experience virtually no episodes of essential hypertension. It is very interesting to note that when individuals from these societies emigrate to Western countries and adopt Western habits, they too fall prey to hypertension. Naturopathic treatment of hypertension has not changed essentially in the last century. The mainstay of the treatment still relies on diet, exercise, stress reduction, lifestyle modification, with secondary support from other modalities such as hypotensive phytotherapy or herbal medicine, hydrotherapy, which is the therapeutic use of water, clinical nutrition, as well as homeopathy. We'll focus on phytotherapy in this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest.
Let's talk about Taraxacum officinalis. This is an unpopular nuisance to many homeowners trying to build that perfect lawn. However, this common weed, the dandelion, is a powerful yet safe botanical medicine for the treatment of hypertension. In a Romania study in 1974, the common dandelion was found to be as potent a diuretic as a commonly used drug called Lasix. Dandelion, however, due to its rich levels of potassium, acted against potassium ion depletion, a dangerous condition known as hypokalemia, seen as a side effect of many antihypertensive drugs which promote diuresis. The leaf of the dandelion was a more effective medicine than the root, although the root is utilized by naturopathic physicians and has a powerful liver-specific medicinal quality.
Crataegus oxycantha, also known in the vernacular as hawthorn, is a common tree in the family Rosaceae, or the rose family. Extracts of the plant in the Western literature date back far beyond the Middle Ages. Even the Chinese were privy to its usage, especially as a digestive tonic. The therapeutic principles are found in extracts from the leaves, berry-like fruits, as well as the flowers. In Europe, Crataegus is well respected for its effects at lowering blood pressure, blood lipids, reducing angina attacks, and preventing and perhaps reversing atherosclerotic deposition in arterial walls. This plant has demonstrated a remarkable safety record, but because of its powerful effects, it should not be used with certain cardiac or hypotensive drugs and should be used by a qualified practitioner of alternative medicine.
Other herbs are also helpful for hypertension, such as garlic, olive, and olive oil, and ginkgo biloba.
So if the pressures of life are making your blood boil, don't forget about these herbal medicines the next time you reach into the Natural Medicine Chest.
And welcome back to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Visit us at naturalnurse.com and you can click on books, radio shows, one of which is this show right here, The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, right here on Progressive Radio Network. And we have other shows as well. And you can also look at calendar where all our classes, up and coming classes are. And then, of course, we have a vast array of archived classes on demand. And to find those, go to Natural Nurse Academy. You can Google Natural Nurse Academy or just go to naturalnurse.com under services. You will also find that we offer many things, such as if you are thinking of coming out with a product that is a natural product, herbal-based or nutraceutical, then you need to have a regulatory expert as well as formulator and educators on your team. And we talk about that there as well. So today, we are so happy to have as our guest, Michael Conte, who is a pilgrim filmmaker. We'll ask him why that. And we're talking about one of his movies, The Unruly Mystic, St. Hildegard, which he went into in great depth, and he's doing a whole series. So thank you so much for being our guest today, Michael.
Thank you again for having me.
And the best place to find him for more is Crazy Wisdom Films or theunrulymystic.com. And of course, we'll have that as a live link from our show archive. And Michael, why do you call yourself a pilgrim filmmaker?
Well, because I think we're all on a journey, and I kind of wanted to own that in my descriptive hyphenate. You know, most filmmakers are like, you know, actor, writer, director, producer, and you know, I'm a seeker. I'm a pilgrim, and I'm using that experience to amplify my art to then share to the larger community.
So that's a good reason, because of the searching, you know, both internal and external that you're doing, you know, for your own spiritual growth, your own personal growth, and then it's your also professionally where you're sharing what you're finding with so many others. So that's why I do want to just throw that name out, Rudolf Steiner, to you.
Yeah. That's the Waldorf schools.
One of his projects, right?
Yep. And he has been suggested to us. He is on my short list.
Oh, there you go. So he got another nomination from me because of his work in biodynamics. He's another one of those individuals like Hildegard. The more you dig, the more you're amazed. You know, like he did that too, you know. And the anthroposophic medicine, I mean, an absolutely fascinating individual as well. But, you know, back to Hildegard for today, because she's just endlessly interesting. Because like you said, with her being cloistered, and you use that word anchored, is that a known word? Like, was it in German a word that meant that somebody's, you know, basically locked in a tomb and away from the world?
Yeah, and I'm not. It's Anchorage is the full proper way to describe that, is that she's anchored into the church. Mm-hmm. And that to me, I think, is an English word. I'm not sure what the German word would have been for that. But the idea of, well, we all know what a ship anchor is, so I think that's the same. I think that's the same analogy to use.
Right. And how she would have then had such knowledge and experience, like I brought up, those beautiful paintings that she had, we might call them a mandala, but that's a very Eastern mystical concept. So how would she have been privy to that? Or would it have been maybe after she came out, people on trade routes exposed her? Or was it just a vision? I don't know that you have the answer. I'm just throwing out the question.
Yeah, and that's kind of the question I've been having, because when I first went there to make this film and I was talking with Dr. Vikar Stregla, who's a scientist, a doctor, I assumed that she had tested things out on people and had done the proper protocol based upon what my understanding is of Western medicine. Obviously, there's a shamanic approach to practicing medicine or healing that you're very much more in touch with in terms of the work that you do when going to Jamaica. And other places, which I find really fascinating, but that does require you to be hands-on. But for 20 years, she's in Anchorage. And how is she being informed?
Except when she came out, you mentioned she was 38. And although many people, that's the end of their life in those years, 1,000 something, she lived all the way into her 80s. So that is like another whole lifetime, during which time, I'm just guessing, I don't know, she might have been exposed to traders coming through the area with, you know, Indian artifacts of some kind. I don't know. Or she got it as a spiritual vision.
Yeah. I think that's probably part of the truth here, is that she was learned. She received information. She saw materials coming through in her medicine. There's a lot of Ayurvedic components, right? I mean, we're talking about galant, the Chinese ginger. I mean, that's not a German folk medicine. You don't find that on the ground in Germany,
right? So she had to be exposed to it. But something like hops. Now, hops, I know, was one of her favorite herbs. And I don't know if it's just, you know, a mystical story or if it's true that she is the person who invented beer.
Well, so thank you for mentioning that. And I actually wanted to include hops in the book because of what you just said. And Kathy Cavell said, no, it was not one of her favorite herbs.
Okay.
And so I decided not to push that point. And I went with chamomile. And I can actually, I think that might be a safer choice at this point to talk about than hops. But I like the idea of hops because there's a brewery up in British Columbia that does a Hildegard beer. They have her on the label and everything. I have a T-shirt with, I think it's called Naughty Hildegard.
So what you're saying, that's a great name. What you're saying, and unfortunately, we're getting to the end of our time together because now I'm interested. Did Kathy say that it is not true that Hildegard was cited with fermenting hops and creating beer?
I didn't get into that detail with her. She just said hops was not a favorite herb of Hildegard. And this just came up. And so I think it would be best to, at a later point, if you would like to, is to have that conversation with her.
Yeah, I would. I would love to. Yeah. I would love to know that because I know she is credited with that throughout herbal literature. Not saying that it's her favorite herb, but just saying that she did use it as a fermente.
And we do know they were using it as a fermenting because they couldn't drink the water, you know, drinking wine, drinking beer as a way to actually intake beverage without getting sick.
Sure, because hops has an antibacterial effect.
Yeah.
So that's very, very interesting. Well, I want to thank you so much, Michael, for being an incredibly fascinating guest with us today right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And please let us know more about your upcoming Hildegard celebration in September so that we can share that with our audience as well.
Yeah, thank you again so much for having me. And it's just been a delight to meet you, Ellen, and talk with you a couple of weeks ago and then be on the show with you. And thank you for everything that you're doing, too, with as a nurse and using medicines, natural medicines, as a scientist, too.
Thank you so much, Michael. And thank you, listeners, for joining us once again right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You can always find us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse, or Instagram, The Natural Nurse. And until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, hoping that you stay healthy.